Markets hitting new highs, but how does the foundation look? And if the bear hits, will it be secular or cyclical?
This is Jerry Tumas Smart Money, a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services with Cornerstone President and Founder, Jerry Tumas. Jerry Tumas is a certified financial planner. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member, FINRA, and SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services and Independent Financial Group, LLC, are unaffiliated entities. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Tumas Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station, or its management, or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. We are here to talk about your finances, investments, and the economy, and we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.
Welcome to Smart Money with Jerry Tumas. This is Michael Williams. Well, Jerry, I thought it might be good to kind of take a step back and do a little bit of a big picture of our outlook, because, you know, the last few weeks we've been more focused on, you know, short term, what's going to happen the rest of this year into early next year. And so if we only listen to that, then we sound like we're bearish all the time, but we're not. The big picture wise,
right,
when we look out to the rest of the decade, we actually have a very positive outlook on the market.
Good point. I think what we need to highlight on today's show is kind of, and you previewed this on the coming on the beginning of the show, are we secular or cyclical? And a lot of our listeners probably are not even familiar with that term. I did a speaking engagement once for one of our firms that we worked with, and they were, and I hate to say this, it was a lot of them were CFPs, a lot of them were longtime financial services reps, and I talked to the head of the broker dealer and I said, you know, I think, are we in a cyclical or secular? And he looked at me kind of with a funny look on his face. He said, Jerry, I don't think most of our reps even know those terms.
Right.
And I was shocked. I'm like, what? Okay, the CFAs in the world would know that term, but it's kind of a gap. It's kind of, there's a blind, I don't want to say a blind spot, but sort of in the training of a lot of the financial professionals. Now, I think they got a big dose of what a secular bear market looks like from 2000 to 2009. But I think it's really important to differentiate this. So as you mentioned in the show, in the short run to me is not the next 2 weeks. It's not the next month or two. It's between now and this time next year, really maybe 6 months or so. If you look at our newsletter called Election Blues, you'll see that. Now, again, I've not been perfectly accurate. No human that I know of has been. I did not see the 2008 subprime debacle coming ahead of time. Flat out. We didn't do that. We didn't get all of our clients out in time. This is full disclosure time, folks. We did get our fee-only guys out in September. We ended up with, you know, high teens losses for the year, but that, frankly, is better than a 53% crash. Our smaller commission-type accounts, we were changing broker-dealers at the time, and we couldn't get them out in time. That was the most horrible experience of my life, believe it or not, because I really care about our people. But anyway, that was our one, we didn't see this one coming. Freight train hit us. If you go back and look at our history, and we've got these documented in our materials, which we have at our offices, and we'll rerun these through our new compliance guys and see. But it's 1987, past performance, no guarantee of future results, obviously. Wrote a newsletter called 1929 Revisited in March of 1987. I mentioned I thought we were going to have a big crash on Wall Street, and I mentioned the proximate cause, which ended up being almost the only cause. It wasn't the only thing. There were a lot of things, that dominoes that led up to this, but the big issue was what we call program trading, which is where everybody had bought the same software, and the same software had stop losses built in. And as one of our money managers, you were in that meeting years ago with Ted Theodore around 2000 or 2001. He said what might have been good software for one firm or 10 firms or maybe even 100 firms is not a good idea for 1,000 firms to have the same software that issued the same sell signal in the same time.
Because if everybody's trying to sell at the same time, prices go down.
In a big way. So we had a 25% decline in a single day, Monday, Black Monday. I remember still the reporters are chasing President Reagan to Air Force One. What happened to the stock market? What happened to the stock market? And he turned around kind of halfway and said, I don't know, too much selling? I'm like, okay, well, that's...
He's correct.
But there wasn't even a remote dip in the economy during that time. It didn't even pause. The economy was in a full-blown bull for the economy, but the market crashed. Okay. The other issue would be the 2000 market. So 2000 has a lot of similarities to where we are today, and I think that we want to talk about that. I think we want to play on that today. The 2000 market, and it's kind of how I felt all along. The 2000 market, we had the dot-coms going straight through the roof. Now, the dot-coms in that era are significantly different than the FANG-type stocks of this era, mostly. In that, most of those dot-coms, and I recently looked at a piece, I believe it was from Bank Credit Analyst, that said, okay, here's the big winners in the 90s. Here's the big winners in today's market. One common name, and that was Microsoft. All the other guys fell out of bed. Cisco Systems, at that time, Ned Davis did a piece, the most overvalued stock in the history of the world, in 2000. Cisco Systems, Ned, they did a piece on, you know, tulip bulb comparison. And if you're not familiar with that, folks, tulip bulbs are a classic investment mania. There's a great book out called Investment Psychology Explained. You can probably get a used copy on the internet. I don't know if it's still in print, but it's one of the best ever written.
Martin Pring.
And I remember Fisher in his column in, was it Business Week? Anyway, Fisher highlighted that book. He said, this is one of the best books. He said, the one chapter on investment psychology is worth the price of the whole book. So, and it, still, it is a great book. And it was written in 1994 before the dot-coms were even known. Nobody knew what they were getting ready to be in 94. Al Gore had not invented the internet yet. That's a very old joke. But anyway, so the bottom line is investment psychology is a really important component of all this. So if you look and overlay the big, what we call the trophy stocks of each decade, each decade's had a, you know, we've gone over this before, the Nifty 50 stocks in the early 70s, which collapsed. Everybody thought they were the best thing going, and they collapsed, and you had an 85 to 90% decline. This is documented in William O'Neill's book, The Future for Investors, as well as How to Make Money in Stocks. He's documented that crash. So everybody thought the same thing. The herding instinct happened. The lemmings all ran over the cliff together. They all said, we've been burned twice on technology startups in the 60s. We're going into these blue chip stocks that'll never go down, like Avon, Clorox, Disney. They went down between 85 and 90% in the next bear. And most of them, the ones that made it through that, which is almost all of them, because they were enduring names, that was right about that. But it took them about 15 years to get back to break even. I'm looking at a chart here from Bank Credit Analysts when they analyzed the difference in Cisco Systems. And Cisco Systems, I remember doing seminars. Michael, you were in some of these.
Yep.
And we would be, I was talking about Cisco being, at that time, in 2000, it was the most, according to Ned Davis' research, it was the most overvalued stock in the history of the world. Okay, and I would do seminars on this, and I would have guys come to my meetings and go, I can't understand, Jerry, why are you beating up on my company? I'm like, it has nothing to do with your company. It has to do with the gross overvaluation of your stock. And Ned Davis came out with this piece, for the same amount of market cap of Cisco Systems, you could buy this list. And it was like 30 household names, Anheuser-Busch, it was just a whole laundry list of, okay, so for the same amount of money, the current earnings of Cisco, you could buy these 30. He labeled it Tulip Bulbs 2000. All right, that was a historic mania. I'm looking at a chart from Bank Credit Analyst, and it says, the title of this two-piece chart is, Will NVIDIA Follow in Cisco's Footsteps? Uh-oh. I'm stomping on some toes here. Some of you probably have NVIDIA or have had it. Some of you probably still do. You decide. You know, I did a newsletter called Buller Bear, You Decide, right before the crash in 2001 and 2. Anyway, so the price of Cisco reached almost 100 in 2000. Now, since then, the earnings have gone up and up and up and up and up and up. So Cisco's still around. The company's doing well financially. It's not one of the dot-coms that ceased to exist. I still remember a Super Bowl commercial during that time where they had, Super Bowl in 2000, a lot of these new dot-com millionaires had money they didn't know what to do with. They had money to burn, or billionaires. And they, a bunch of them took out ads on the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they had guys on the surgery table with money coming out of the wazoo.
That's right. And then 2 years later, you have another commercial, and it's a guy, a pale horse rider, kind of Western. Ooh, he's walking his horse through the cemetery, and here's .com rip and .com rip and all these companies that had gone out of business in 2 years. So that was the most extreme mania in modern history. Mm-hmm. The mania that would be more extreme than that was the 1929. But you've had them all throughout recorded history. You had the tulip bulbs in the 1600s, which is the first mania that was documented,
right,
where the price of a rare tulip bulb, viceroy tulip bulb, was worth more than almost the entire economy of Holland. It was great. But what it does, it shows how human emotion takes over, sometimes based on a small amount of information. It's called a contagion effect for behavioral finance. All right, so I'm going back to this. Will NVIDIA follow Cisco's footsteps? So if I look at the earnings per share, the trailing earnings per share of Cisco since 2000, it had a little peak in 2000, then it went down in the recession, and it's gone up and up and up and up and up. Well, what about the stock price? It peaked in a what we call a dunce cap type peak. It went straight up. Okay, it went from in mid-90s, you know, like 97-ish, it was about $7 a share. It peaked at almost 100. And then it went back down to 10 in the crash. Where is it today? A little over 50. The stock is 34% below its all-time highs. Even though the company has gone on to prosper, it's still a viable company in America. It has not recovered its old high.
Yeah, you take the mania out of that chart, and it's a nice stock chart.
It would be, yeah.
But if you owned it during the mania, because a lot of people,
if you
by
bought
the way
it
that works,
in 99 or
you
2000,
bought it towards the top.
You got crushed.
Yep.
You had a 90% decline. The Morgan Stanley .com index declined 90%. No offense to Morgan Stanley. It's just they created a new index because that was the new toy. That was the new toy that possessed not only Wall Street, but it possessed the whole country. The whole country's madness. And that's one of the things that I love, this book, classic book called Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds, written in 1890-ish. And he said, almost whole societies will go mad over the turn of a piece of paper. And they only recover their senses slowly, one by one. So what happens is you go from this madness to a slow awakening that you're not dealing with reality. Because of why? Because the contagion effect. Because greed can be and is, for most people, contagious. Get rich quick. It talks about in the Bible. Don't get into get rich quick stuff, or you'll have miserable perishing. So the issue is that as extreme as we are now? No, I don't believe it is. At the same time, when I pull up some data, again, this is from Bank Credit Analyst. I'm looking at chart. The chart says cheap for a reason, and it's talking about the earnings of the market and so forth. Now, this is from, 2 days ago? So it's very current information from Bank Credit Analyst. The projected trailing 12-month earnings growth. Now, one of the things you got to understand about the way Wall Street works, and this is not something I'm saying is corrupt, crooked, or wrong, or illegal, or immoral. I'm not saying that. I'm saying this is the way the human behavior part of Wall Street works. If you look at history, what happens is when you get to the top of the cycle, and I'm not guaranteeing we're at the top, but I think we are. I think we're forming the top as we speak, is my view.
Sure looks toppy.
Yep, because again, normally, oftentimes NASDAQ will have a dunce peak kind of top, but the S&P virtually never does. The S&P will have a rolling series of tops, kind of rolling, top-ish looking, and it usually lasts several months, and then wham. All of a sudden it hits. When is the wham going to hit? I don't know. I'm preparing right now for the next bear market as far as we're concerned. But the bottom line is it might start before the election. But at this point, that looks fairly unlikely given the fact that the payroll report came out surprisingly positive today. Color me skeptical. But the fact that the payroll report has been revised down, last time I checked, not counting today. All right, because we don't know if today will be revised. I'm just a little suspicious that since it's been revised down something like 10 out of the last 13 months, and that never gets the headlines. Does it get that? No. We have a footnote on the last page of the Wall Street Journal. By the way, we said the jobs report for the big corporations, 280,000 jobs. Well, okay. No, it wasn't quite 280. A month later, they come, no, it's really more like 200,000 jobs. And they come out a month later and go, well, it was really like 120,000 jobs. Oh, well, no, it's only 80,000 jobs. I don't know about you, but I'm just, you know, I'm color me skeptical. I'm like, okay, is that a real number? Or is that, as Trump likes to call it, fake news? I mean, I would never want to say that the regulators in our country have any political bias whatsoever. None. We know that. It's not true. But the bottom line is, I'm not taking that number at face value. Why? I've seen them revise it like 10 out of the last 13 times. Excuse me, but what's your track record? This reminds me of Charlie Brown and Lucy in the football. All right? So if you remember Charlie Brown, he's like, I'm going to kick a field goal. Lucy's sitting there going, okay, I'm going to hold the ball for you. And every time he comes up to kick the ball, she pulls the ball out of the way at the last second, and he lands on his backside. And he goes, I'm not going to do it again. You fool me again. She goes, no, I won't. I'll hold the ball for you this time. Sure enough, what does she do? She pulls the football out of the way. He lands on his backside. She tricks him again and again and again. Finally, he's like, anyway, that's, I don't know, could this, is this possible? I'll let you be the judge.
Well, I think it's also important to note, so even if that number is correct, let's mm-hmm. say there is no revision. Mm-hmm. Let's say they got it right this time. They've adjusted how they do their survey to get the
right. They've got it right this time.
Even if we just assume that.
It was wrong 10 out of the last 13 times, but this one's right.
One of our researchers through Ocean Park, and I've seen this through BCA and the others also, they were showing just recently a three-month rolling average payroll growth. So using that same information.
Yeah.
It's still in a downtrend,
right?
Even at the number they provided
even
us.
With the new number, which could be slightly fabricated, but oh no, we cannot say that.
Because nope. Back in January 2022,
I don't think it's fabricated, but it might be wishful thinking.
It just for context, back in early 2022, those job numbers were in the 500,000 people range.
Right.
Now we're down in the 180 or whatever it was. So it's still in an overall downtrend.
Yeah, it is. But it's a much better number than we got in the last few months. Subject to revision. Could be revised. Anyway, let me go back to where I was going on this. So every cycle, am I right? I don't know. We'll see. You decide. You know, read the newsletter, Election Blues. I keep driving people back to that. I'm hoping to throw out another one in October. We'll see. But I'm still looking at this one going, okay, this reminds me of the dot-com, but on a smaller scale. That's what it reminds me of. I could be wrong. Caveat. However, to quote Detective Monk, I could be wrong, but I don't think so. All right? So the issue here is, when you get to the top of the cycle, to me, there are all sorts of earmarks that this looks like the top of the cycle. Maybe not the day of the top, but that, you know, I would be surprised if NASDAQ didn't top out in July. If you look at the underlying Nifty 50 has now gone to six, those six stocks, and you look at where they were in July and where they are now, still looks like it's a good chance that was a top. But anyway, so when you get to the top of the cycle, folks, and now I'm explaining the rules of the game. If you're trying to play in the NFL, people are complaining about the referees are throwing too many flags. The average game, they have 15 or 16 flags, and it's disrupting the game. There's no momentum. They're overkilling on officiating. They're too politically correct. No, I won't say that, but they're over-officiating. They're throwing too many flags. Okay, well, I think that's true. Probably, but I don't know. I'm not an avid NFL fan anymore since, you know, the Cowboys are 50-50. But the bottom line is, here's the way the rules work. If you don't know how the rules work, expect to have problems because you don't understand the rules. Part of the rule of the game is this. This is not a conspiracy on Wall Street, the evil. Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows. Well, anyway, I'm in a mood today, as you can tell. The bottom line is, this is not some massive conspiracy that the Wall Street firms do for business. The issue is, again, all of them are subject to confirmation bias and or contagion effect. So This doesn't guarantee that we're going to enter a bear market. It doesn't guarantee that we're at a top. But I will say, if you look at the history of the big tops on Wall Street, the guys that are the stock analysts, they're not macro guys. They're micro guys. Michael, you know a little bit. You got both sides. You got a macro and a micro side to
right.
you. But the micro guys are analysts. They're paid to be micro. They think micro. They can't not think micro because that's the way their brain is hardwired. And so when you get to the top of a big cycle, I'm not guaranteeing this is it, but I think it is. When you get to the top of a big cycle like this, they're always projecting the stock earnings to go higher until you roll over. And then what happens is part of what induces a panic in a bear market is the expectations of the marketplace. And by the way, there are no more, possibly the most optimistic people in the world are stock guys. The bond guys, like I said, they got their old, like the old days, the green shade, their adding machine, which you don't have anymore. But they're the bond guys, bonds are five times bigger than stocks, the bond market. They're hyper-conservative by nature, or they wouldn't be dealing with boring bonds. Boring, boring, boring bonds. You know, the stock guys are high enthusiasm, risk takers, sometimes way too much risk and leverage, but they're optimist, usually to the nth degree. The analysts, on the other hand, are more like the bond guys. The analysts are micro, 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 so they're making projections, and this, the way it works again, most of the time the people that are analysts have, they graduated from an MBA fairly recently. They're not 30-year professionals that have been in the industry 30 years. They're young, another crop of young guys that they pay to be analysts. And they know how to be analysts from the micro. They may have not been through a big cycle. Probably have not, almost certainly. Most of them are new, fresh blood because Wall Street rotates them through, and if they make it, then they get to a higher position in the company, but they don't stay at the bottom as an analyst. So the analysts are usually your, let's call them your rookies or close to that. What are they projecting? Every time we've ever been to the top of the cycle, they're projecting straight line extrapolation that it goes higher. Right now, bank credit analysts are saying, hey, and all of our analysts are saying that Wall Street is, in their view, grossly overpredicting how much the earnings are going to go up in the next 12 months or 6 months. Well, guess when that happens? Past performance, no guarantee future results. It normally happens at the top of the cycle. As we mentioned in our book, From Boom to Bust and Beyond, how many people, and I didn't see this either because I didn't have, and no excuses, but I did not have inside information on the subprime derivatives that were hidden in the off-the-books that the regulars didn't know about, hedge funds of these big firms that bankrupted the firms and nearly bankrupted the world. Okay, so you had to be inside watching how they made the sausage to even have that access to that information. But the bottom line is, as I made the analogy in Boom to Bust and Beyond, the analysts are looking at the bark on the tree while the forest fire is raging just over the hill, coming your direction with high winds. So here again is what happens normally at the top of the cycle, and I can't guarantee we're at the top. I think we are. I think we're in the topping process. Like I said last week, we're not in a bear, but I think we're in the transition between the bull and the bear. There's normally a transition phase between the bull and the bear, and if you can imagine, it's like the NFL players used to, they had the Sports Illustrated show or whatever, and they'd get two teams of NFL players to have a big tug of war. And it was a big deal. Celebrity all-star.
I enjoyed those.
Yeah, and they had a flag in the middle, and if you won, you pulled the other team into the mud. And so they're all pulling back and forth, and they're equally matched. And so the NFL players on both sides are pulling back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Finally, one side wins, and they capitulate, and the other team's going into the mud. That, to me, is what we're in right now. Mm-hmm. That is, we're in between we're in the transition. I think we're in the transition stage between a bull and a bear. We're clearly not in the bear yet, but signs of an imminent top are all around us if you know where to look. So let me get back to this chart. This is a chart from bank credit analysts. So remember, at the top of the cycle, the analysts are always projecting, they straight line extrapolate to the future, and they're saying 20% earnings growth over the next 12 months. And the guy, Peter Berzin at Bank Credit Analyst, said, is this fake news? He said, we're thinking if it doesn't have a bear market, you're looking at 5% earnings growth, not 20. Now, if you're basing your investment decisions on an expectation of 20% earnings growth, and it turns out to be 5, oh, happy days, we don't care. All right, so let me summarize this chart before we go to the break. If you look at trailing earnings growth, future growth, expected growth works fine unless you're at a turning point. When the market hits a turning point, the expected future earnings vanish. Then not only are you not going to have earnings, you're going to have a crash in earnings and you have a crash in a bear market. So if I'm right about the turning point is close by and we're in this tug of war between the bull and the bear, take that into consideration, because past trailing earnings to me are more reliable. It's based on history. You know what has happened. Projected earnings are presuming the future, and if the market turns, if the economy turns, they vanish. I'll give you the data on this chart when we come back from the break. Jerry Tuma and Michael Williams, more with Smart Money.
All right, well, we'd like to take this break to remind you how you can learn more about us. You can go to cornerstonereport.com. That's cornerstonereport.com. On our website, you can learn more about us. You can see what we look like, since most of you have only heard us. Then you can also go and get Jerry's special report, at least the previous ones you can get on the website. The current one, you need to sign up for on the website. And then you'll get it via email.
And you won't get junk mail from us, and we won't sell the mailing list, etc. You will be only getting our stuff that we send to you if you sign up for the email.
Yeah, you basically get one email a week saying, hey, the current radio show is now available on the website if you missed it.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a current special report that's only going out via email, it'll be included in that email. So we're not out to just bombard you with anything. So again, if you want to get that current newsletter, yeah,
No junk mail, no junk email.
Yeah, Election Blues, you need to go to our website, Jerry's Special Reports, and sign up for it. Want to see the previous ones? It still has a bunch of the charts we're referring to. Like when you referred to all the different decades and what was popular stocks in those decades, you can find in the Daddy Bear newsletter from 2022. Also on the website, like I've already mentioned a little bit, you can catch previous radio shows. If you missed one or would like to encourage someone to go listen to it, that's the ideal place to send them. Send them to our website, cornerstonereport.com. And just click on Smart Money Radio. If you'd like to reach out for a free consultation, you can do that through the website also, or you can call us at 800-327-4285. If you're going to call us again, that's 800-327-4285. Well, Jerry, before we kind of took a break, just remind everybody of our contact information. You were kind of teasing me because this chart you're trying to get to, I think, is very interesting. It's like I keep thinking he's about to say the chart, and then you have other good information. But right. I'm thinking, well, when are we getting to the chart?
Well, but again, this totally goes back to what normally happens at tops. So past performance is no guarantee of future results, right? But at the top of the market cycle, typically the analysts on Wall Street, because again, they're usually not the most experienced guys. They usually hire them right out of business school with their MBAs. But they're micro. They're micro analysts. And you have to have a micro analyst to do what they do, because they have to analyze each individual company and their prospective sales and earnings. And it's a micro process. There's no other way to do it. The problem is, like I said, they cannot do macro. It's almost impossible to be really good at micro and very good at macro. My strength is mostly macro, not micro, as we've all learned over the years. Anyway, so the issue here is, this is from Peter Berzin with Bank Credit Analyst last week, and he shows, here's what the deal is. Now, Bank Credit Analyst is bearish universally across the board. Mm-hmm. All of their analysts, there's 60 economists worldwide in 8 offices, they don't get paid bonuses based on the market going up. They're not on Wall Street. Their job, and nobody's perfect at this, is to give completely unbiased advice and recommendations and charts, and their economists and their market guys. But they don't have any conflicts of interest. They get hired or fired if they're good or bad.
And I would just add, not only they all are bearish, but they are, where they vary is when they think it will occur.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly.
It's the timing.
It's a timing issue, not if we're going to have a bear. It's a matter of it's
yeah. Some think, you know, is it sometime start, this year, beginning next year.
Is it beginning next year? We don't know. All right, but anyway, so keep in mind again, the projected future earnings are fine when you're in the middle of the cycle. When you're going from the bottom to the top, in the middle of the cycle, the 80% of the market, they're helpful. You know, they're helpful if you're analyzing stocks. At the major turning points is when they're disastrous. Because when you get into a crash situation and you're at the bottom of the cycle in a bear, the analysts universally are projecting it to go lower. Now, go back and do your own research. I can guarantee this because it's a well-known fact with the side of the business I work in. When you get to a big bottom like we had in 2003 at that bottom, or if you had in 2009 at that bottom, the analysts are not perma bulls at that point. They're almost perma bears.
Right.
They're looking at the projections going, it's going worse. It's going down more. It's going down more. Why? Because they're looking at the micro and they're looking at the recent history, and that's all they can see. When you're at the top of the cycle, which is where I think we're in the transition between the bull and the bear now. I don't know how long that's going to last. Do we have an outbreak of some kind of geopolitical event? Because I see all the dominoes are lined up, but you don't have a trigger event yet. That's where we are, in my opinion. Okay, so if you want to say, hey, if we are at a turning point, then I could care less about future projected earnings. What I really want to know is what are the past earnings or history. So you know that's a reliable indicator. Future projected earnings are fantasy if you have a turning point. They're fine in the 80% in the middle. They're terrible at the turning points, both the bottoms and the tops, that you don't want to listen at all at the bottom, and you don't want to listen at all to analysts on Wall Street at the top, because they're universally bearish if you have a long bear market. They're universally bullish at the top. With that fact, these again, this is the inside part of the game you don't know. So you can be a referee and referee yourself with your own portfolio, right? Throw a flag. Well, anyway, so here again, Peter Bereson, Shape Your Conviction, Cheap for a Reason was the title. The S&P 500. So now we're going back to actual recorded, which is the only way Wall Street used to do this. If you go back in history, the Wall Street started using projected future earnings in the dot-com mania of the 90s. Most people don't know that. It's a standard practice on Wall Street today. It was invented in the middle of the last part of that decade, though, because everything was going up so much and earnings were going so much, it became, oh, well, we have a new way to analyze stocks. Instead of looking at the trailing earnings, which are history, which we know are reliable because we have those audited numbers, we can rely on, oh, we're going to go with projected earnings. And then as we're projecting these stocks into the future, that's part of what created the bubble that most people don't know.
Well, it seems like that also be an effect of having so many dot-coms go public that had no earnings. The only thing you could do is project.
Yeah, but yes, and that's true, but they were even doing that for the viable companies. And so it became a change in the whole behavior of Wall Street to switch from, because you looked at their past track record and their past earnings, and too long to get into all the details on that, but the bottom line is somewhere right around, from my memory, probably around 1997-ish, people started saying, well, yeah, but if you look at the projected earnings next year, this stock is not overvalued. Well, to some degree, what you just said is right, in that there's no way to justify the price of this stock except to extrapolate really high earnings in the next year or so. And so that's part of but that became standard practice on Wall Street then, which never had been done in history. That was a new metric because we were in a new era, don't you know, and all the old rules don't apply anymore. All right, well, that's old history. All right, so anyway, back to this chart I've been pontificating about talking about. This is from Peter Bereson, bank credit analyst. Again, they're my favorite of the three big firms we use for analysis. The S&P trailing earnings growth. Why should you care about trailing, not projected future? Because the future earnings growth vanish into thin air and then become hyper negative in a bear. If we have a recession, even if it's a mild one, those projected earnings don't happen. They vanish. And what happens is there's a radical come to Jesus kind of moment for the market going, holy crap, we were buying the stock based on this projection of the next 20% of earnings. And not only is it only going to be 5, no, it's not going to be 5, it's going to be negative 15. And there's a radical adjustment very quickly. You can have a massive crash very quickly When people go from, I know we're going to have soft landing, there's no doubt about it, the Fed has promised me we're going to have soft landing. Wait a minute. Let's look at the economic evidence in just a moment about how soft this landing could be. All right, we'll talk about that in a minute. We're dealing with stocks right now. So back to the chart that I've pontificated on for almost 30 minutes. The S&P 500 trailing 12 months earning growth, not projected future, which is wrong at the turning points. I'll say that again. The projected future is wrong at the turning points. It is wrong at the turning points. Okay, so if we are approaching a turning point or at one now, which I think we are, who cares about the projected future earnings, which right now, Peter Berzin said, are fake news anyway. He said the projected future earnings growth of the market. Now, this is probably bank credit analysts right now, most reliable of all of their 60 economists around the world. He's been the most accurate. He didn't jump the gun on the bear market. He 2 years ago, he was saying the next bear is not going to happen until the second half of 24 or maybe a little later than that. But is recent earnings growth fake news? That's one of his slides. Well, the Wall Street's projecting 20% annual earnings growth. He said realistically, maybe 5, assuming you don't have a recession. That's best case scenario. Okay, so the analysts are doing it again. They're projecting way too high, straight line extrapolating, over-optimism, the contagion effect, competition amongst the analysts. It's just, that's the way Wall Street works. It's human behavior. All right, so he's saying this. If you take the Magnificent Six, Apple, Amazon, Google, Meta, Microsoft, and NVIDIA, we're clearly throwing Tesla out because their stock has done terrible in the last 12 months, 18 months. So the Magnificent Six now, again, Apple, Amazon, Google, Meta, Microsoft, NVIDIA, trailing earnings growth, it's on the books. It's not projected future earnings that don't happen at the turning point. It's on the books. Trailing earnings growth, 55.3%. Now, that's spectacular growth.
That's amazing, yeah.
That is spectacular growth. Is it any reason these stocks have gone straight up, which to me, possible, likely top, soon, if not the July. What about the other 494 stocks in the S&P 500? Everybody benchmarks the S&P 500. People buy index funds of the S&P 500. People buy ETFs of the S&P 500. What about the other 494 trailing? This is on the books.
Now, remind me, the Magnificent Six was at
55.3% earnings growth over the past 12 months, so, trailing earnings growth.
So then the rest of must have a nice earnings also.
Zero. 0.00. Holy cow. Holy shnikes, Batman. How? Wait a minute. The S&P 500 is hitting a new record high. So is the Dow. Take some more kitty juice. Who's spiking the Kool-Aid? I'll let you think about that one. But when six stocks who've had spectacular earnings growth of 55.3% over the past 12 months, not projected future earnings, which are going to be wrong if we have a turning point, the rest of the book value, the rest of the earnings growth of the S&P 494, everybody but six stocks, is at 0.00. That should be a raging bull market in my mind, don't you think? Not quite.
Earnings.
Not quite. Okay, what's wrong with this picture? It's this, to me, absolutely is not a sustainable deal. If you assume, and this is why James chapter 4 says don't presume the future. If you assume that we're going to have a soft landing, and it's a guarantee, the Fed is guaranteed they're going to create a soft landing, then by golly, you can make a case for anything you want to. I'm not going to assume that. I'm going to look at a couple of pieces here that may kind of shoot that in the foot. We're not trying to be perma bears. As you mentioned on the beginning of the show, I think we're going to have a cyclical bear market. Again, let's explain the term, cyclical versus secular. I don't think it's a secular bear market. A secular bear market is one where the market has bad problems for a long time, usually over a decade. But you could, the last secular bear market we had topped out in 2000 with the dot-coms and bottomed in 2009 after the world nearly ended, right? That was a secular bear. The market, if you look at the last 100 years, has had three of them. I don't think this is that. I don't think this is a 2008 thing. I think it's a cyclical bear What we don't know, as to me, I see the dominoes lined up, but I don't know what the trigger event's going to be, and it may be unknowable. It may be like Donald Rumsfeld saying, the unknown unknowns. You don't know what could trigger it. You just know that a lot of stuff's set up for that. Let's look at this issue with the Fed, first of all. All right, so I'm going to read some stuff from Alpine Macro, one of our other analysts, and we're dealing with the Fed here. First of all, they're showing the Bloomberg Finance downside surprise index from U.S. labor market. Now, we know we just had a monster report today. What, 250, 280,000? What was it?
Something like that, yeah.
Anyway, massive. And I'm not skeptical at all that it could get revised downward, even though like 11 out of the last 13 have been revised down, some of them radically revised down. But anyway, that's nothing to do with anything. We know the political environment has nothing to do with this, right? All right, so I'm being facetious and or sarcastic. But they're talking about the Fed Open Market Committee meeting. The message was quite clear from the Fed. The Fed is more concerned about downside risks to the labor market than upside risk to inflation right now. Indeed, the Bloomberg U.S. labor market surprise index has plunged to levels last seen when? I don't want to be negative. Not a doom and gloomer, not a permanent bear. But the surprise index has plunged to levels last seen in 2008-2009. Oh, no. Okay. Could this be a warning? I don't know. No. Or permabulls. Permabulls. Always keep it positive. Yes, sir. Anyway, we believe that Chicago. Now, this is Alpine Macro. Now, bank credit analysts, 60 economists in 8 offices around the world. Their whole firm has now adopted. It is now a bear soon. Not now. We're not in the bear yet. I think we're in the transition period. Alpine Macro, full disclosure, is about 50-50. Half the guys are going, we're about to have a big bear. Half the guys are going, oh, we're optimists.
But what you're pointing out, I think, is important because up to about a month ago,
yeah,
they were pretty much all bullish.
Up till a month ago, they were all saying soft landing, yeah. And now 50% have defected to the bear camp.
So that's a big shift for them.
It is a big shift. I'm glad you mentioned it. So Alpine Macro said this. We believe Chicago Fed President Austin Goolby's comments are particularly insightful to the Fed's thinking. He started noting that the U.S. economic conditions are largely consistent with the Fed's dual mandate. While inflation rates are still a little above 2%, short-term change has been in line with the Fed's target. Okay, that's not the important part. Labor market, the Fed's objective is maximum employment is met with a jobless rate at 4.2. He said, here's the point that's important. Goolsbee said that he, quote, would love to freeze both sides of the Fed's dual mandate here. He'd love to freeze it where the unemployment rate is at current levels and the inflation rate is at current levels. Keeping interest rates at the highest level in decades and being slow to lower them would put the dual mandate in jeopardy. Ooh, wait a minute. Goolsbee put it bluntly, if we want a soft landing, Wall Street is universally anticipating a soft landing. Mm-hmm. He said, if we want a soft landing, we can't be behind the curve. Warning, Will Robinson. Warning. Lost in Space, 1960.
And behind the curve means on lowering rates, right?
Exactly. He said, it's just not realistic to wait until problems show up. So they're trying to get ahead of the curve here. I get that. I don't think they're going to be ahead of the curve at the end of the day. The Conference Board's Consumer Confidence Index, the difference between jobs are plentiful and jobs are hard to get, fell once again in September. For more than 50 years, past performance, no guarantee future results. But if this has happened for more than 50 years, you might want to pay attention to it. Maybe. All right. For more than 50 years, the Conference Board's indicators, this has signaled a rising unemployment rate and is warning that the labor market could soon fall short of the Fed's dual mandate. Bottom line, that's Fed speak, but the bottom line is that the downside to me is a high probability of happening. The upside to me is the point of maximum optimism. It is like, okay, we always go through this cycle. It's human nature. At the top of the market cycle, as John Templeton, one of our all-star all-times, one of these days I'm going to write a book on this topic, I think he coined the term, when you get to the top of the cycle, you've hit the point of maximum optimism. And he said it this way. He said, if I go to 10 doctors and ask them about my condition, if 8 out of the 10 or 9 out of the 10 tell me to do a certain thing, I need to follow the majority, the 8 or 9, because they're... The majority is going to be right there. If I go to 8 or 9 architects on how to build a bridge, and 8 or 9 give me the same advice, I need to follow that majority. He said, if I go to 8 or 9 stockbrokers and they all say to buy, I need to sell. Because when you reach the point of maximum optimism, which is where I think we probably are, the next leg is usually really bad. And that's where I think we're getting ready to hit.
And to get to that soft landing, the Fed's got to really thread the needle.
Because if they just decided,
hey, let's just go lower rates a bunch again, then that could overheat the economy. And inflation, which has not gotten back to their level they want.
At all.
It could start going up again. And now they're behind the curve on inflation.
And there's some evidence that that might be occurring here. So the issue is, if you look at certain like commodities and stuff like that, some of them are starting to shoot back up again. So I don't think it's to mention
we got Middle East war. If you get
oil prices,
if you get Iran involved, oil prices could go up, and that affects a lot of things.
And I'm
in
getting
inflation.
Really mixed input on this from the standpoint of somehow ended up on an email list, I think through Facebook, of I think it's called Iran Today, but anyway, it's a guy that writes from the inside view of Iran.
Mm-hmm.
He said he thinks that the Ayatollahs had to retaliate against Israel. That was completely ineffective, as we know, but that's going to put Netanyahu more aggressive on retaliating against them. So he said essentially that they had to retaliate or they would lose face and they would lose, you know, nobody believes, all their allies are fighting with them, the Houthis and the Hezbollah and all these guys. They had to retaliate because they can't afford to lose those guys. Morale and everything else. We're fighting the enemy. At the same time, they probably knew it wasn't going to be real effective. But Israel's going to have to, Netanyahu's going to retaliate. He's flat out said that. Okay, so is this one of the dominoes? I don't know.
Well, I think it's important to bring up, too, we had the interview Matt Gerken did with the Middle East expert.
Yeah.
And he said, one of these times when either side says, well, exactly, I need to do something to save face, one of them's going to take it too far.
One of them goes too far.
And that's when it escalates.
And it's too successful.
Right.
And they're not necessarily intending to do that because they don't want to create a conflagration. But somebody is too successful and somebody really bad gets hurt or whatever, and then it starts becoming a full-on war. Will it happen? I don't know. I'll let you be the judge. I'm not a Middle East expert. But the bottom line is that all the things that I see in the economy right now are lined up. We don't have a trigger event yet. I believe that we're in the tug of war between the bull and the bear. That would normally be that's probably a topping out process. So if you look at the history of major tops in the market, NASDAQ frequently is an event. It's not always NASDAQ. Like in the George Bush era, it wasn't the NASDAQ that had the dunce cap peak. It was housing type stocks and stuff like that. So whatever the mania of that bull market is normally has a dunce cap type of peak. It goes straight up and then it starts going down. And when it starts going down, the margin calls hit. And we haven't necessarily had that yet here. But it's usually the hot dot of the day, whatever the hot sector of the market is in that cycle. And one of these days I'm going to do a piece on every decade has a hot dot. You know, every decade has some, you know, again, it was the Nifty 50 in 72. It was gold and oil in 80. It was Japanese stock market in the Reagan administration. Then it was the technology dot-coms after that. And then it was things related to China the next decade. This time has been not the Nifty 50, but the Magnificent Seven, which are now 6. So every decade historically has had some sort of mania type event. When that mania peaks out, that is normally not a rounded top. That's normally a dunce cap looking peak, and then it never goes back above that one. So if I'm wrong, NASDAQ's going to break out to a new high. I'm just very skeptical that will happen. The S&P, on the other hand, because it's 500 stocks, will be a rolling top. It can be gradually ratcheting higher like it is now. It's very marginal upswing every time we have a new upswing. But I think it's, to me, I'm watching for the black swan to come out of nowhere. Bottom line is, if you look at the underlying economy, the leading index of economic indicators is still negative and is in a record period of time due to the pandemic, extra savings, things we've beaten to death over the show. The cyclical economy, this is EPB, is also now negative. It's the coincident economy that is still positive. So the leading indicators, which are not infallible, but they've always led, as far as I know, in recorded history, are all negative, and they remain negative, and they're still negative. The coincident economy is now turning negative. The lagging economy is not negative yet. To me, that's, the old analogy I use is that the engine on the train is the leading indicators. The rest of the cars will eventually follow it. If you look at the NFIB, that's the National Federation of Independent Businesses, that's small businesses. If you look at the sentiment of the small business owners that are polled here, it's the worst since 2009. So tell me this is a roaring bull market and this is such a phenomenal economy that everybody's getting rich, when reality is that the small businesses, which employ close to two-thirds, right at around 68% of Americans work for small businesses, and they are universally gloomy, but you have a handful of big tech-oriented companies that are still doing records. There's something wrong with this picture. More with this, Smart Money with Jerry Tuma and Michael Williams next week.
Jerry Tuma's Smart Money is a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services of Dallas, Texas. Jerry Tuma is a certified financial planner. Financial advisors at Cornerstone could help you if you prefer to delegate your investment decisions to a financial professional. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services, an independent financial group, LLC, or unaffiliated entities. We publish a newsletter, Cornerstone Report, which is available on our website or by calling our toll-free number at 800-327-4285. That's also the number to call for more information about anything we've discussed during today's broadcast. For more information, visit our website at cornerstonereport.com. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Tuma's Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station or its management or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. Remember, we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.